Hello, and welcome to another episode of Healthy Minds. I'm Julie, your host. I have a special guest joining us today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, everyone. First, thank you, Julie, for having me. It's so exciting to be here. My name is Nikedra Robinson, but everyone calls me Nike. I say like the goddess, not the shoe. For those who don't know, Nike was named after a goddess, the brand. I mean, I'm the founder and CEO of an amazing organization called Black Girls Vote.
Yay, great. So you might have guessed from that introduction that we are going to be talking about voting and voting suppression today, along with some of the history of voting laws throughout our country and what's going on a little bit currently. And stuff has evolved even in the last few weeks while we've been planning this. So hopefully we'll get a chance to dive into that. So how did you get interested in this topic and the work that you do?
You know what? Honestly, Julie, and I tell people all the time, if you would have told me 20 years ago that I would be working in voting and anything around voting, I would say not wrong person. I'm going to be a marketing executive or an executive living in New York, living this fabulous life as a wife with kids and all this great stuff. But, you know, life had a different plan and God had a different plan. And I fell into politics, but everything happened so organically. And I'll start with my first job out of college. I went to school for business marketing in Maryland. I went to Frostburg State University. And upon graduation, I was looking for a job, like many people. And I, you know, was like, my quarter life crisis. What am I going to do? And at the time, there was a lot of transitioning happening in the city of Baltimore, even though at the time I resided in Baltimore County, Mayor O'Malley became Governor O'Malley because of that election. And then Council President Dixon became Mayor Dixon. And as you know, with administrations, when things change, you tend to take your staff with you. So now Governor O'Malley took his staff with him to Annapolis. And then Council President Dixon was looking to fill her administration. And so someone I knew from Frostburg shared with me an opportunity to work in the mayor's office and to do community engagement. And so my job and my role was to be in the community as a representative of the mayor and the administration to find out the needs of the community firsthand. That's going to your community association meetings, your meeting with the folks, you're organizing meetings with secretaries, cabinet members, and doing community walkthroughs. And it was then I realized the power of being an elected official and the power of being a mayor, particularly in a place like the city of Baltimore. As I would tell people, one day I could have a meeting in the morning, Preakness is here, I'm here with some of the wealthiest people, whether it's in the state of Maryland or outside, talking about the Preakness this weekend. But later on that evening, I'm in West Baltimore at the police district meeting with the community leaders about crime. So all within a matter of a day. And so that was my first job. And then afterwards, I got an opportunity to work for Lieutenant Governor Brown. I left the Dixon administration after 2 years, worked for Anthony Brown as his director of outreach, the community engagement there, and went to the state agency. I went to work in the agency, so I worked for the Department of Housing under Ray Skinner, was a special assistant to the assistant secretary. All these things were happening. Life was great. And then in 2014, what we saw is that Anthony Brown did not win the election. And when Anthony Brown didn't win the election, I was a political appointee at the time, so I was at an agency. In 2015, after 6 months of working in the Hogan administration, I got called into the office one day and said, today's going to be your last day. And I remember just crying and, you know, just, you know, with any transition, you know that you can possibly lose your job. But I'm like, I've been around for 6 months. I've done a great job. They like me. And no, it didn't happen that way. So I got let go. But ironically, prior to that, I'm in the city of Baltimore, but we saw it happen in 2015 with the riots. The riots happened in April 2015. And as people were watching it all over the country, you know, my family members were calling me and like, do you need to come out in the county and the suburbs? Because Mondawmin Mall is in walking distance of my home. And so I said, no, I'm fine. And the next day, a lot of us got out there in the community. What can we do? Can we clean up? What are we going to do? And that happened in April. I lost my job in July. And on the brink of an election year, I thought, you know, 2016 is going to be a big year. What can we do collectively? So I purchased a domain name, Black Girls Vote, didn't tell anyone about it. And then in August of that same year, 2015, someone got murdered directly across the street from me in Baltimore. And I said, yeah, it's time to move on Black Girls Vote, even though I thought about it. In October, I told one person about it, and she said, you got to move. And November 30th, 2015, we held a press conference at Weston High School, the oldest all-girl high school in the nation, public high school in the nation, and said, we're launching Black Girls Vote. And that's to, you know, we want to change the world by getting young Black women out to vote. And I knew that everything that happened to me was tied to policy, politics, one way, shape, or another. So I know that was a long story, but it gave you more insight into who I am and how I got here and that story.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think it's great, even though, you know, it isn't obviously in the moment, to share when we perhaps experience these severe letdowns where we're let go from a job or fired or, you know, whatever it may be, is that it's certainly not the end of your journey. And look at what you've done since then.
It's the beginning of another journey, right?
Yeah. So again, Nike created Black Girls Vote. So you can check out, they have a website. Do you want to share the link for us really quick? Is it blackgirlsvote.org?
Yep. So it's www.blackgirlsvote.com. That's how you can get information about us and Black Girls Vote, our organization.
Great. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about maybe the history then. And, you know, of course, everybody knows about 1776, right? Really, goodbye, England. No, thank you. But that wasn't really the beginning for a lot of folks. Basically, just if you were a white male, that this was maybe a moment of freedom for you. But for most of the country, it was not, right? So we have, I think people are becoming more familiar with Black history over the last months, which is good. And it has been quite some time since I have been in any sort of history class. And I know that some folks listening are going to be in college and maybe fresh out of high school and hopefully have received this in our curriculum. But for the rest of us that are older, and it's been an amount of time, let's say, since we have been in our history classes or our government classes, perhaps didn't get this in our education, I thought it'd be great to kind of go over some of the different amendments. So I think, but I don't know, that the 13th Amendment is maybe where we want to start.
Okay, to abolish slavery. Do you want to start there? And I think that, and like you, I think Julie, sometimes, even for myself, it's unlearning and relearning my history. And kind of, as we know, to your point, more and more people are in tune and learning more about Black history. And growing up, yeah, I didn't have a family or household that was, you know, let's talk about this, let's talk about that. It was kind of like you learned what you were taught. And so even now, even with the, you know, the abolishment of slavery, and we're like, you know, this is great. And then with the 15th Amendment in 1869, you know, getting Black people the right to vote, or, you know, saying, okay, men, you can vote. And so for us, it looked like progress. And, you know, as we're out to vote and, you know, the ability to vote, depending on where you were located, you know, that was critical in our history. But, you know, as we saw what happened over time, and even when we talk about like the 19th Amendment, which we're celebrating now, is the women's right to vote. And so in 1920, and what we saw when Black men were given their right to vote with the 15th Amendment, it didn't necessarily make everyone happy, right? That didn't mean white women could vote. It didn't mean that Black women could vote. And so what we saw with the women's suffrage and now is that women got together, whether that was Elizabeth Stanton and, you know, and saying, hey, we want to get together, and Susan B. Anthony, and, you know, we're going to start a movement. And that's for white women to get our right to vote. And sometimes even now, you know, learning the history, it becomes more and more controversial because, you know, there's record and saying that, you know, my right to vote is more important than a Black person's right to vote. You know, I'd rather vote. And, you know, it was in a little bit more disparaging terms than that. But, you know, as Black women who participate in the suffrage. So when we talk about, you know, women's right to vote, and, you know, here in 1920, we're celebrating 100 years. August 16th makes 100 years. And so there are a lot of events talking about the women's suffrage movement. But we know that it was Black women that also stood on the sidelines marching for the right to vote. I'm a member of a sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. And one of our first acts of service was in 1913, the Women's Suffrage March. But there was controversy where I'm saying, no, you know, some women wanted the Black women in the back. And the Black women were like, no, we don't want to be in the back, right? And so you have so many people that fought for the right to vote when you talk about voting. And I spent a lot of time on the women's suffrage because you're like, you're Black girls vote. And I said, yeah, but we can't ignore that a lot of times that Black people get erased in that history. And, you know, Sojourner Truth, her infamous speech, Ain't I a Woman, when she gave that speech in Ohio talking about, hey, women, I'm here on the sidelines with you fighting for the right to vote. But sometimes I'm often forgotten. And that's what we saw in history with Black people continuously fighting for things and not getting what's due to us. And then it wasn't until 1965 when the Voting Rights Act passed where Black people, where we were given our right to vote. And so that meant that, as we saw, that even though technically in some places we had the right to vote, in a lot of our southern states, there was voter suppression. There were your poll taxes that existed. There were your literacy tests that existed. And all those things that to suppress the Black vote. And so when Black people got together, unified, and, you know, when we saw the marches and people fighting for our right to vote, you know, some would say arguably the 1965 Voting Rights Act was the most important piece of legislation for Black people. And I agree that that was a huge, huge moment and something that LBJ signed.
Yeah. So to quickly summarize, it went 13th Amendment was the end of slavery. Then it was 15th Amendment, which said you cannot be denied the right to vote based on color or race, correct? Mm-hmm. And then we had people do the, I believe it was called Black Codes and Jim Crow laws, where they were, okay, sure, I'm not discriminating based on the color of your skin, but now I need you to pass a literacy test or, and I think this is where that 1/16th thing came in, where you couldn't have been descended from slaves. I don't know. There was a lot going on in this kind of prevention, basically.
Yeah, and I think what's important is when we talk about the states, right? This is when the states had the power. And so even though we were given the right to vote, you know, you in Georgia could say, yeah, that's the federal law. However, they're not going to enforce it. And this is what we're going to do in Georgia, right? This is what we're going to do in South Carolina. Maryland, more the northern states, they may have done things differently. When we look at some of our southern states, your Mississippi's, your Louisiana, all those states. And so it gave the states the power. And so when the federal government, and then that's why it was so important, because right, to your point, there were things put in place to say, no, you can't vote, right? You have to pay a tax. You know, read the Constitution, say this oath. I mean, just some of the tests, if you were to Google now, some of the literacy tests that were given, I did an exercise where I had some executives complete one of those literacy tests. And the time I was giving them the test, it wasn't that I was nice administering the test, like, oh, take your time, you're so smart. You know, some of that didn't happen, right? And so the pressure, the taxes, all these things are happening because I just simply want my right to vote. And the states had that power. And so when that happened in 1965, when LBJ said, no, I'm going to go ahead and say this is federally, you know, we're going to have oversight over this. And that was huge because you no longer had those states being able to suppress the Black vote. And that's what we saw over the time.
Okay, thank you. I think it's important that we highlight there wasn't technically the ability to vote, but it was certainly suppressed, especially by southern states, which Maryland likes to pretend it is not a southern state, but it is. Yeah,
yep.
I know. People are like, well, we're really north. No, I'm sorry, you're still below the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and I believe, and again, it's been so much time since I've taken any sort of history class or government class, and I have not been as vigilant in the policy and politics as I should have been, right? I do as much research as I should do before I go out to vote in local, regional, state, etc. But I think in 2013, didn't the Voting Rights Act get overturned, or part of it got overturned?
Yep. So you're talking about the Shelby versus Holder case, right? Which was huge. And that's when the Supreme Court, because what we saw up until 1965, we saw a lot of discrimination taking place, discrimination to keep Black voters away from the polls. And so what happened, and we saw the, you know, this big case that came up and saying that, you know, Shelby versus Holder, meaning Holder, the attorney general for the country, is that you no longer have that in certain states. So you can no longer hold the states responsible for what happened in 1965 or prior to 1965. That it's a new day. Things have changed. You know, we're no longer living in this racist community and or society. So you don't have to worry about discrimination. You don't have to worry about voter suppression, those tactics that happened prior to 1965. All that is done away with. We're just this happy kumbaya country, state, and community. And then so that's when it was overturned by the Supreme Court. And so what that caused is that there was no longer federal protection. And what was so critical in 1965, because then it reversed going back until prior to 1965 when it gave the states the power. And so when you give the states the power with no federal oversight, then that's when you start to see a lot of the tactics, a lot of the voter suppression, a lot of things taking place. And of course, people are going to say it's not voter suppression, right? But historically, and we look at some of the things that are happening in modern day, it's quick to say it's another way of voter suppression.
Yeah. So let's bring it to the modern times, right? So we talked about 2013 with this overall Shelby versus Holder. And then now I know Kentucky was just in the news recently, in many of its polling places. Is that correct?
Yeah. So what we're seeing now is that in this election particularly, right, and in this time, is that there's so much happening, unprecedented that's happening, and there are so many fights and things are happening in an election year, right? With so much happening in an election year, each state is going to try to determine, you know, what's right, what's quote-unquote right, and ultimately it's all about control and the power, right? What power? And I know we're going to talk a little bit about gerrymandering a little bit later, but ultimately different people in different states want power. So what you'll see across the country are different states enacting laws that will benefit, and some will say benefit, and some on the other contrary would say this isn't benefiting our community. But by giving each state the ability to enact their own laws, what you'll see some people who agree and some people don't agree. And so you'll see in Georgia, you'll see in, like, for instance, when we talk about Wisconsin, when we talk about what happened with COVID-19, and right, COVID-19 is happening, we are saying that nope, there is no vote by mail, and that's why vote by mail is such a big deal right now when it comes to voting. We are saying that even in the height of it, that we're asking you to come to vote, you know, standing in long lines, quote unquote, socially distanced. How are we enforcing that? We're not giving PPEs. And then you saw the long lines. You saw people out there primarily in a lot of places, some would say disenfranchised, poor African-Americans in line waiting and subjecting themselves to the virus. And historically, Black people, it means a lot. I would say for my grandmothers, my aunts who were part of the civil rights movement, they do not want to stay home, right? This meat is so symbolic to them. They know what it was like. They were born prior to that. And so for their right to vote means so much to them. So for them to have to jeopardize your health and democracy, that was a big deal. We saw those long lines, and you're starting to see now with the election, each state has the right to determine what their state will do, right? In the state of Maryland, for the primary, our ballots got mailed to us for the primary automatically. However, for the general election, the governor made a decision, said, no, I'm not going to mail ballots. I'm going to mail absentee ballot applications. So you must complete the application, return the application. And then once you return the application for the ballot will be sent to you. You complete the ballot, and then you return your ballot if you choose to do it by mail. And then there will also be voting centers available as well. And so that has caused a lot of confusion with a lot of voters. In some cases, in a lot of states, you're going to see that as well, a lot of confusion, because things that happen in the primary election is not happening in the general election. And then with the whole uproar about the mail, right? The United States Postal Service, what's happening now. Typically, you would get your mail every day. Some folks aren't getting mail maybe twice, three times a week, and the systems have slowed down. My mom's a postal worker, and just seeing how that's extremely stressful, and that's impacted even mentally, right? And when you think about mental health and the stress that these postal workers are enduring because people aren't getting their mail, you talk about prescriptions, people are not getting their prescriptions, some people are not getting their monies, their bills, and so all of that is taxed on them physically, mentally, and emotionally. And so that's a greater thing that's happened when we talk about voting and the stress and each state giving their rights to vote. And ultimately, people want to protect their power, right? People want to protect their power. And so the decisions that are being made by those elected officials who ultimately want to protect their power. That was a little long, but sorry.
No. Don't apologize. So I just want to highlight this because it's so important. You will not automatically get a ballot if you're waiting for one. So the primaries, it was sent to us. That was fabulous. Don't know why they're not doing that now. You have to go request it. You have to. And with the Postal Service being slowed down, you need to submit it like 2 weeks in advance, I would say, prior to the polling day.
Yep. And when you say request it, so the State Board of Elections will send you the application automatically. If you are registered in the state of Maryland to vote, they will send you the application. So you don't have to go online. And they'll also send a self-addressed stamp postage envelope. So you don't have to pay for postage to send it back. However, to your point, Julie, it will take longer. And what does that process look like? So what we're recommending, and a lot of the grassroots organizations who are on the ground are recommending, complete the application as soon as you get it. Because once you get it, that gives them time to process it. And then once they process it, then that's when you'll get your ballot sent. The same thing that you got before, to your point, you got the ballot, you didn't have to go through this extra step. So it is a part, as I talked about our history, right? Sometimes learn and unlearn. And so here you have to unlearn the process that taught you in the primary because it's an extra step. And what we don't want to happen is people get this application thinking it's your ballot, but it's not your ballot. You have to request the ballot. And if not, on election day and early voting, you can also have the opportunity to vote in person if you choose. And if you feel safe, some people with the second wave and the numbers still unstable, but they'll feel comfortable or not going to the polling locations to vote in person. So that's the choice that you have to decide and make.
Something else to consider is if you get your ballot and it's, you know, within the 2 week frame that people are saying to give at least 2 weeks for the Postal Service, you can drop it off on the day of. So
absolutely,
there are a lot of ways to make sure that your voice is heard. It's so important, especially in this election. And just, you need to do a little bit of research. You can listen to us, of course, and I hope we're giving you good information, but do go figure out what it is for your polling place, like figure out what's going on so that you are informed and don't miss voting.
Yeah, and like you're right, because there will be the boxes that we saw in the primary election. They were, you know, they were really nicely designed, and they had like the state flags. They drop your ballot here, and so you do have the option. And what we're recommending is put it in those boxes, because you can drive to that box and drop it off, and that does not have to go through the United States Postal Service. That will go directly to the State Board of Elections, in which they have someone monitoring it and protecting it. And so, with that being said, to alleviate that transition time and again, once you get it, please drop it off. They have not disclosed the locations yet. They're still looking for locations, but we're also doing what we're helping to recruit poll workers. As we know that there's a shortage in poll workers, because typically with poll workers, they tend to be your more seasoned folks. They tend to be, you know, folks who are retired, your grandparents, there's something for them to do. They can make over $160 a day. It's a long day, but you get paid to be a poll worker. However, you know, more seasoned people are opting to stay home, understandably, because the virus. And so there's a shortage of poll workers in the state of Maryland. So there's an active campaign to recruit them. Black Girls Vote partnered with Power to the Polls to be a partner to help recruit poll workers. So if you're interested in being a poll worker, visit our website, blackgirlsvote.com. We have a link there on Power to the Polls. And so again, sign up to be a poll worker. You can make money that day. It's a long day. However, you get paid to do it. And it's a way to give back to your community to promote democracy.
Yeah, I love that. A couple of my friends have done that. We're in our 30s, so it's not just older folks. You know, it is a good way to make fat.
Make money today. We need young people. And I think once people see that young people are part of this process, it starts to this shift that, wait, you're taking part in democracy and giving back. And your friends will see it. Well, maybe I should vote, you know? And so that's another way for folks to see that voting matters and you're here promoting voting. So we support that 1,000%. We want to make sure that they're poll workers. But more importantly, we want to make sure that people are getting out to vote. If folks are voting by mail and or voting in person, that you have enough information, you feel like you have enough support so that this election, you know, everyone says this is going to be the most important election of our lifetime. This one is going to be super duper important. As we see, we want to make sure everyone who wants to participate in democracy and their right to vote, that they have the opportunity and the tools to do so.
Yeah, this is like my fourth election that I think is the most important election.
Oh, every election is. Don't worry. Even the midterm. Everything's important, right?
Right.
So the older you get, for me, it's like you start to pay attention to things that you didn't necessarily care as much about when you were, you know, a little bit younger. And so it's so critical when we talk about what's at stake over the next few years. It's absolutely critical.
Yes. So I'm going to be that person and say this election is the most important election. Vote. And don't forget, it's not just the president, right? So the Supreme Court is also at risk. Yes. Of course, we have the Senate, we have the House, right? So there's a lot at stake in this election. And Maryland tends to be a blue state, but that doesn't mean that you need to vote. I think that's something that I hear a lot of, especially since I interact with a lot of younger folks, 17, 18, 19, yeah, 20, whatever, they feel very left out or like their vote doesn't matter. You say to people that say it's just one vote or, you know, my voice doesn't matter, Maryland's blue, whatever, you know, vote for them.
Yeah, I think it's kind of what keeps you up at night, what pains you. And depending on who you talk to, I think you have to make it where it's relatable to them. Because sometimes people are busy, right? If you are, in some cases, you are taking care of an elderly parent, if you're working multiple jobs, you have to get your kids in daycare, you have so many things. Again, multiple jobs, I'm not gonna say the last thing on your mind, voting is not as much of a priority as it is putting food on the table, right? And so what we have to do is talk about the policy and how everything that you do is tied to policy one way, shape, or another. And even if we talk about COVID-19 and the response, whether, you know, in some cases, you know, Andrew Yang was fighting for on his platform universal basic income. What does that look like? And so, you know, that $1,200 stimulus check, it could have been $2,000 or it could have been, you know, $500, right? And so whatever that looks like, it lets you know that those lawmakers who are in place, those are the ones who made that decision on how much you should get, whether it's the additional $600 a week. Now that's gone down to $400 a week. Those are lawmakers who put those things in place that impact your day-to-day life, right? When it talks about education, when it talks about food insecurities and SNAP benefits, all those things, healthcare, it impacts you. And so sometimes we do look at it from the lens because we saw what happened in 2016 when it comes to the popular vote versus the electoral vote. My folks do become discouraged, but ultimately and say, no, your vote matters, but more importantly, your voice matters. And you exercising your right to vote and people seeing you doing that is showing that you don't know who you are influencing, right? And so for us, we have Black Girls Vote chapters in Morgan State University, North Carolina A&T, American University, Howard University is pending. But your network, especially nowadays, is so much bigger than your immediate friends in your jurisdiction. People all over the country, your friends, however you met them on social media, whatever the case may be, they are seeing you. And you could be motivating someone in Pennsylvania, Detroit, Wisconsin, you know, North Carolina, Houston, Dallas, Texas, those states that are ultimately going to decide, you know, who the next president will be because of, as we know, the Electoral College. But then also we have to look at the Senate, right? And so when we look at what's happening in our country, you know, voting down the ballot is so important because people think you just think the president, but now you have to look at, you know, those local elections that matter. And that's where you start to see a lot of the direct impact. And that's when my streets get clean. You know, when will the trash man comes, police patrol, when you talk about defunding the police, which is such a huge topic, that's based locally. And here in Maryland in November, we will decide the mayor of Baltimore, right? That's voting down the ballot from the president down to your local elections, and those things impact you. And so what we try to do is just try to make it relative so people understand why it matters, but then also educate them whenever we can. And then we talk about those races when we talk about Baltimore County, County Executive. That last race with Johnny O and who he competed with, the name escapes me at the moment, not Delaney. Okay, but it was so close, less than 100 votes. Less than 100 votes decided who that County Executive would be. And the mayor in Baltimore, between the primary elections, roughly 3,000 votes. And so when you say that it doesn't matter, a lot of us, you have more than 3,000 followers on social media. If all of you and your friends got together, you guys could change the outcome of this election. You know, things like that, those people make it like, you know what? Maybe my 1-2 votes and my influence also matters.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing out that it's not just, you know, our Maryland bubble or Anne Arundel County bubble or Baltimore City bubble, that we all know people on social media, outside of social media too, but we're interacting with them more on social media today, perhaps before. And so don't forget that you are influencing, as you said, others in other states, in hotter spots, et cetera.
Yeah. And even if it's not social media, through a phone tree or pick up your text message to your friend. For those who went to college, your network is beyond most of the time the folks in your state where you reside. And so just having those conversations about it, and that's where impact comes. And again, that's influence as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about gerrymandering a little bit, since we talked about electoral college versus the popular vote. So I'll let you talk. You tell us.
Yeah, so I think we talk about gerrymandering, and even with anything, it's all about control, right? And so in gerrymandering, you know, historically, if we look at, you know, how the states are broken up their districts, and it's based on the map. And so for every 10 years, we have our census, and we're in the midst of our census now, typically due in April because of COVID-19. That's been extended, but what you're able to do, you're able to see where the folks are, right? And so does that mean based on the population size and which we're able to account for, how many representatives will you get in your state? How many will you get? And so when you start to look at, you know, you have gerrymandering, you look at from based on party gerrymandering, and that's, you know, some would say in the two-party system, Republican, Democrats, but then you also by race, you know, Black, white, Hispanic, Latino. And so there are different ways of gerrymandering. And it's ultimately to control, to maintain and or keep control. And so you have incidents where in Maryland, if you look at our fourth or third congressional district, and how it touches like Annapolis and then Baltimore. And then it's just kind of like, but you know, those maps are drawn a certain way, right? And so how they're drawn is based on how the elected officials wanted it to be, because you can control, you know what, I'd rather this seat be a Democratic seat versus a Republican seat, or based on the population, because we know how they're going to vote. And ultimately, this is how we're going to be able to influence policy. And so what we've seen a lot of that based off the census, and you'll see a lot of gerrymandering, and Supreme Court ultimately a lot of times said, you know what, we can't prove that it's based on race. We can't prove that it's based on party lines. So therefore, giving it to the states to fight. And so when it goes to the states to determine, you have to look at who's been appointed. Are they Republican, Democrats? And most people are biased. And so it's really hard with, you know, in Maryland, it was recommended, and sometimes it, let's form a commission based on to alleviate all of the discrepancies about, you know, this is based on party and this is based on race. But a commission, you know, it's hard to find individuals who are independent, who aren't tied or have interests that are unbiased. And so that's what we deal with gerrymandering. It's all about redistricting and keeping certain people out to vote so that you can maintain the power. And so that's a huge thing that we're seeing across the country with gerrymandering. But, you know, I don't see anything that will stop it. It's just making sure that you are activating your party or your people to stand up against it and or to vote and complete the census.
Yes. So I was gonna, you've completed the census. If you haven't already, it's really easy. I was surprised how fast it went. You don't even have to like handwrite anything and mail it anywhere.
You do it all online, right?
You can do it all online.
Complete the census. And it's about the resources that are coming back to you. You know, you're right. In representation, you know, we hear this all the time, representation matters, but, you know, in a country, you know, based on population, like, no, population size has gone down. You guys don't need as many folks in Congress because, you know, you went from a population of X amount of million to now it's decreased by, let's say, hypothetically, a million people. You don't need an extra representative. However, you know, in Pennsylvania, we've seen that, you know, the population has grown. They need more representation. And so that all comes down to policy when it comes to legislation and the votes that you get to enact. That's national policy that impacts the resources that come back directly to your community in your state, your hometown.
Yeah. And as a psych professor, I just want to point out that bias, you can't escape it.
No, you can't. Yeah. Even if you think you're not, like, yeah, I'm biased. Yeah.
Right. That's for sure. 100%.
100%.
Biases, I'm sure you do as well. They're not necessarily really big ones, but they pop up and you're like, oh, hold on, wait a second.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then what is, oh, and as a psych professor, the census data is really important to help us understand our psych research as well, to extrapolate to the general public. So if for nothing else, do it for, I'm just kidding, but really do it. Find a reason that it makes sense for you, but do it. The census, get out there to vote. When you consider that the census is happening during this year with all the voting, that they're eventually probably going to redraw some of these lines.
Yeah, redistricting, right? Redistricting is huge, right? And based on the population. And if they can't count you, and if you're not accounted for, it's pretty much saying that you're not there. You don't exist. But then when we look up and seeing things being taken away, it's like, no, you have to speak up. And sometimes people are afraid, you know, like, I don't know, you know, the government knows my information and things like that. They can find you if they want to find you, right? And so I do think that it's so important that people understand the importance of the census and what comes back to your community. And if you want to improve your overall community, sometimes people don't care. But look, like you said, it's really, really quick. It's really, really fast. And overall, it helps put things and put people in place that will ultimately, ideally support us in our communities.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully, right? Depends on who. We get in office and who you support, which policies, which representative you support. And I think that's a challenge sometimes because people expect that everything's going to change overnight with an elected official or this person's supposed to do that. And you also have to understand that people go in there, I do believe a lot of elected officials sometimes go in there with one intention, but based on what we talk about, you know, those campaign finances and who's funding your campaign, all those things matter. And then so if you don't have a strong community behind you that's voting for you and supporting for you, it's so much more likely for an elected official who got into office, who's now, I don't want to be threatened, who's been influenced by those individuals who funded their campaigns. And so it's hard for you, for someone who gave you X amount of dollars to say, no, I'm not worried about what you have to say. I want to take their voice. Their voice matters more. And so that's a fine line that our politicians have to balance sometimes. And sometimes some will say it's on the right side of history. Some will say it's not. And that's why it's so important that not only are we voting, but we're looking at the policies that they're enacting and that we're supporting them, not just on election day. You know, showing up to those community meetings or the hearing things online, getting their newsletter, so you can find out what those folks are doing. And in some cases, if they're not doing what you expected them to do, it takes calling them out. And then that's when you'll begin to see direct impact on the policies, right? And things that are happening that you want it, and you begin to see the fruits of your labor by voting if you start paying attention, you start asking them, you start inquiring, calling their offices. And a reminder that these elected officials work for you. And I think that's so critical in this day and age. I think so many folks are intimidated by voting or policy and things like that and don't think they have access to these people and politicians, but you absolutely do.
I email my representatives at least once a month on things that I want to make sure that they're supporting. And these are easy things to do. They're pre-populated. The type in your address and you just click a button and it goes to whatever your three people that it needs to notify. So I know that I I'm not sure how much I helped, but I helped with upcoming 988 number, the mental health crisis line, and some other local mental health advocacy things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you can sign up for these newsletters from your representatives and various organizations, of course, that are, so for instance, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention that I sit on the board for, I get an email that's like, hey, we need your support because here in Maryland, they're doing this thing. So you're like, oh, okay. And it takes me 30 seconds to click through and, you know, send it off. And this is another way that you can continue to show up. Like you said, it's not just primary day. It's not just the election day. It's also these little things reminding folks that, you know, hey, you're in office because I voted for you or I didn't vote for you and I don't like you.
You still work for me, right?
Right.
You know, you're so right, Julie. And I think that's why it's so critical in your example that you write your legislator, right? You email them and you could do it. It's really, really quick. That it's so important that we stay engaged and seeing what they're doing once we send them to office, whether that's locally, state or federally, and wherever we send them, they are there to represent us. They work for us. And ultimately, when you look at these elected officials, I think majority of them go into office with the intent to do right. However, you know, it's really, really hard when they're influenced by these individuals who fund their campaigns, right? Campaign finance is so real. It's so critical because it's hard for, you know, Julie's complaining. And I say, usually we know that you vote, but, you know, let's say Julie's husband, John, doesn't vote, right? And so different people aren't voting. And then we look and see that these people are funding my campaign. These people are pouring into me. They believe in me. And so when you look at it, it's not that Julie, John doesn't matter. However, I want to stay in office. I want to maintain my role in office. I love being here. And so when we look at budgets, right? And if you have this pot of money, it's $1 billion. And of course, there's millions of dollars in federal government, billions, trillions. So I would just, a quick example, with this $1 billion that we have to work with, right? And saying for someone like you, Julie, I know you're passionate about mental health, as am I. I had a parent, you know, Nike, you know, grew up in a household where mental health was a big deal. My father's bipolar, schizophrenic. So we have, you know, on one end, you know, we have this legislator saying, I want this $1 billion, even though all of it may not go towards mental health, majority of it, I think it's so important that goes to mental health services and resources. And, you know, me, Nike, I support that. I believe that. However, there can be someone else that's, you know, Jamie, you know, who's from a rural town and country, and she believes in, you know, protecting farming. And there's nothing wrong with Jamie because she's had an impact. Her business or her farm has been impacted by, you know, what's happening. And that $1 billion pot, she thinks the majority of that should go towards farming and resources for farmers. And it's not that Jamie's wrong. It's not that Nike's wrong. It's based on our experiences and our truth and what's happening in our lives that we find that's more important. And so what you have is you have these elected officials who have to make these decisions. So I want to make sure Nike, who voted for, you know, representative, whoever, that you got my vote. When you stood there and you campaigned that I'm going to make sure that more money is going to go towards mental health services. So now I look you up and I look at roll call and voting records and say, oh no, you supported that. And you didn't flip flop on me and supported Jamie and her farm and something you may not have campaigned on or gave more resources because maybe in some cases, Jamie may be tied to a large corporation or something, or different corporations that fund campaigns. So it's about holding our elected officials accountable and based on what they campaign on, because people make promises. We want to make sure you keep your promises. And based on my community where I live, this is what impacts me. And this could improve my quality of life. And that's ultimately what it's about. Who's going to make your life better? And that's what elected officials are there to do from a local standpoint, state, as well as federal.
And it's such a careful balancing act for them. And I know that there's been recent talk about looking harder at where the finances are coming from for a
little. Yeah, that's a whole nother battle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And putting limits on it. And it's hard and challenging because what we know, you know, I can open up 10 businesses and my business can only give X amount, right? So ultimately, it's about who do we, and I think what we tell people as well, another way to empower people, say no matter how much money LeBron James have, Oprah Winfrey have, Jeff Bezos, all these people with money on election day, they can only vote one time. They only have one vote. Now, can they take their money to influence others to vote? Absolutely. But can they only vote one time? Yes. And so can you, right? So it doesn't matter. And so that's a part of how do we make sure that you feel in some cases, this is a time where you are equal to them when it comes to your ability to act and vote in that one act, that one vote.
Yeah, voting is a great equalizer, I think.
Great equalizer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've briefly touched on the mental health aspect of voting. And I'll just quickly share, when I vote, I feel very proud of myself. I don't know why, but it gives me a good sense of accomplishment. I feel like I am not only looking out for myself, but for my fellow Americans or Anne Arundel County residents or Maryland residents. But, you know, I think it's a little bit more complicated than just feeling a little bit of pride. But I figured I'd be upfront about how I feel on voting day.
Yeah, everyone's different, right? Everyone's so different. It depends. And some people, like, you feel like it's become like a routine. You know, studies show once you begin to vote early, you'll more likely do it again and again and again. And it becomes a part of your DNA. And that's something we're passionate about with Black Girls Vote, is getting people out to start voting early. And if you vote early, you vote often. It becomes a part of, you know, who you are, your DNA. And that's so critical. And then we pass that on to other generations and people watching you do it. And so it's important to vote. And how do you feel? Sometimes you're like, oh man, I forgot to vote. You may not have that pride, but you make sure that you do it. And some people ask you, did you vote? Like, yeah, I voted. You know, you didn't vote, right? And then so it depends, you know, on the person. But I'm happy that you're happy when you vote. And I'm happy too. Like, I cannot. Like, how can you lead an organization called Black Girls Vote you don't vote? Like, oh no, you have to vote. Like, it's not even an option.
Yeah. And I will, full disclosure, I did not vote when I was 18 in the presidential election. It would have required absentee voting because I was away at college and I like missed the deadline and all this kind of stuff. And so I didn't vote. And I also didn't think it was important. And I just want to, full disclosure, I didn't think it was important. I was 18. I was whatever, the world is fine. And I have learned so much since then. It is fine. We need everybody's vote. I didn't want folks to write me off either, I guess, while listening, being like, oh, well, she's a professor, whatever. Yeah. I also didn't vote when I was 18. And it took me until the next election to realize how important it was that I was heard and I started getting more involved. And this is actually totally normal, if you allow me to wear my professor hat for a moment, that the youngins are less likely to care about community involvement, and that grows as you get older. You get more invested into your community because you're likely in the same area for a while and because your voice is heard. You can see the impact on what's changing. And it's kind of a two-directional thing. And I know you have to say here, and I can't wait. But I think I want to acknowledge I didn't vote when I was 18. I regret that now. Do I think it had a super long lasting impact on things? Not so much, but I would hate to continue that track. I would hate to have my voice heard.
Yeah, I think that's, you're honest. You know, same with me. And I honestly, I can't remember because I was away at college like many people. And so not growing up in a household, like I told you, when I was in college, I studied business marketing. I didn't grow up in a political family and, you know, I heard NAACP and, you know, growing up and I wasn't an active member. And so it wasn't anything that was emphasized in my home. And so like you, many of us, it wasn't a focus. I'm in college. I'm away. I'm living my best life, right? But then as you get older, you start telling people, you know, learn from me, right? Learn from me and my mistakes, or this is how you can make an impact. Request an absentee ballot. So I think it's all like education. And so that's why it's so important that you're educating voters and educating on the impact. And what we're finding now, you know, the first time in our country, this is the first time that baby boomers are no longer the strongest voting bloc. It's the young millennials, Gen Z, where you have the power and the ability to eclipse the baby boomers. Will that happen? We don't know, right? There are a lot of things at stake this election, and will more young people turn out than our baby boomers? Maybe not. However, that's a potential there. Whereas before, it was almost like the baby boomers, but we're seeing more and more young people, more and more people are progressive, quote unquote, and they're more engaged, whether it's climate change, you know, defund the police after the murder of George Floyd. These are things that you're getting to see more. And the power of technology and social media. We're seeing things in the impact of policies. And when we talk about, you know, Breonna Taylor, and while, you know, for us as, you know, Black women, the African-American Black community, you know, that's something we're talking about, but why haven't they been arrested? Your state's attorney does that. Your state's attorney is elected by the people. Why hasn't this happened? And so you start to make sure, you start to correlate the two. And then you realize that, you know what? It's really simple. Policy isn't as hard as a lot of people make it out to be. And sometimes it can be intimidating. So we just want to break it down in layman's terms that basically this is how it works. And then this is how you can be a part of democracy and be a part of policy. And that's getting involved by voting, first step.
Yes. So well said. I think people don't realize how many positions of power are elected and not like, you're really good at your job and your resume. Yeah. let's promote. No, it's almost all politics and the real positions of power.
Everything. Yeah. Even the MBA, right? We all have to go to the Motor Vehicles Administration, right? And in so many times you hear like, I hate the MBA. It's horrible. That experience is the worst thing ever. But they work for you. And it's so crazy because, you know, when you think about it, who oversees the Department of Transportation is appointed by the governor, and the governor is elected by the people, and the governor decides who's going to head that agency. And it's not based on votes. It's based on, you know, who he thinks is best for the job. But we put that decision maker in position and in power to hire the person to lead this agency, right? And so ultimately they work for you, but we don't look at it that way. It's almost like we take it. It's almost like sometimes people say, with politicians, almost like sometimes being in an abusive relationship, right? You keep going back and then you don't change, right? And so it's almost like, no, people have been in office and you could change them. And I like to say, you interview them for 4 years. So if we elect, you know, Julie Mary to a position, let's say Anne Arundel County Executive, you know, she works for us for 4 years. She's on probation for 4 years. So in 4 years, you know, we'll see if she's met her standards, if she's met the quota, if she's done a good job. If not, we're going to hire someone else who we think who has also applied for the job, who's a candidate that we feel like will be better to serve us. And that's how we have to start changing the conversation. Understand that these elected officials work for us. And that has not always been taught to us. And so now, again, we're just learning things a little bit differently.
Yeah. And I also grew up in a household where we actually didn't talk about politics as a rule, like nothing to be controversial was ever spoken about. It wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that I even felt comfortable talking to my grandparents about politics. And that's really strange to me. And I still feel weird about it.
Yeah.
And I think it just depends on kind of the culture you're brought up into and things like that. But what is different is that the internet is out there. And I know I'm going to date myself here, but I didn't have access to Facebook. I didn't have access to all sorts of free forums and things when I was 18, which is why I didn't know, right? I didn't know any better because my family was like, oh gosh, we don't talk about politics or religion because we are this religion. And, you know, it was just swept under the rug. And I think a lot of people have experienced that too. So, you know, everybody
has taboo. Even with mental health, right? And it's so interesting because growing up in a household where mental health existed, where there was an issue, I didn't talk about it. Like all throughout high school, my friends didn't know. It wasn't until years later I was having a conversation with a really close friend. And we were like, wait, you were going through that in high school? You were going through this? Like, I was going through something similar, but we didn't talk about it, right? And so now when we talk about therapy, right, and resources for therapy, that's something that, you know, I think is so critical in our communities when we were dealing with trauma. And, you know, me talking about being in a city like Baltimore, where on average over 300 murders happen, that's traumatizing, not only for people who live there, for the generation, young kids, things that they've had to experience. And so we need to make sure there are resources, right? Mental resources that are put in place for our communities. But these aren't things that at one time we didn't necessarily talk about. Therapy was something like only crazy people go to therapy. No. I believe everyone could go to therapy, right? Everyone has something that they're dealing with. And so I think to your point, things that we weren't talking about before, now we can talk about them. We're much more comfortable talking about them. It's so much more accessible. And then everything that we talk about and that impacts us is tied to policy, it's tied to resources, it's tied to government, everything is. So our job is to educate people on those resources and making sure that you know how you can get more things for you by advocating for them, advocating for these things that will improve your life. So no, I totally get it.
Yeah. So do your research and vote, darn it. We need the younger folks to weigh in. Like you said, the older population is getting older. We've seen what the older population has done with our country. And I think that we have a lot of young, promising folks there, whatever side of the debate that you are on personally. But we have a lot of people that have more clarity about their purpose, if that makes sense. So we are able to do more of the resume checking and see more about them, their detriment and to their benefit. And so it requires you to do the education. I know it kind of sucks. There are websites and things out there to help you look like, you know, if I want to vote for person A or person B, and it's what they're for and against, you can check that out. Make sure that the website is reputable, of course, and just do your due diligence there.
I totally agree. And I think more importantly, it's not about the party, right? And I think so many times you try to get boxed into like this party. It's really about party. It's all about policy, pardon me. And so for me, even with Black Girls Vote, we're nonpartisan. We have women in there who are more conservative and more liberal. It's all about, you know, particularly what are the things that you're passionate about, right? And how do we make sure that no matter if there's a Democrat in office, a Republican, an independent, whoever's in office, that your voice is still heard and your voice still matters, because no matter what, your vote matters, your voice matters, because they work for you. And so I think that's something that we have to emphasize much more of, and that there are policies that, you know, a Republican could introduce that could improve my life and advance me the same way a Democrat could. And so I think we get so caught up in the party, sometimes we miss the messaging, we miss the policy sometimes, but look at the policy, and you're absolutely right. Like, just look, study it as much as you can. And sometimes it's a lot. It can be overwhelming, but it's okay to just take a minute to look, you know, do some research on them.
Yeah. So I just want to, just because I love this analogy that we've been using, you know, for hiring these folks in a normal job, we would not hire them and leave them alone for 4 years. That's absurd. Like, we're not going to check in for a performance review after 4 years. So think of it like you can maybe not micromanage your elected officials, but you can check in and see what they're up to periodically. And, you know, it's up to you and how much bandwidth you have available, but don't just one and done it, right? So make sure that you're checking back in more than every 4 years or so, our elected officials.
Right. It's like a performance review. So, you know what? I think we should have a meeting, right? And that meeting can be a town hall meeting, right? And even in this election, you see that so many people from like national, you'll see that, you know, in the middle of the response of COVID, they hadn't even been back to their jurisdiction. You know, they're in DC, but they haven't been back home. It's like, wait, we need to call you back home because we sent you there. Don't forget what we, the people, need to hear from you, you know, the constituents in which you represent. And so many times we can't lose sight on that they work for us. Email them, call their offices. A lot of people have community engagement, constituent services, all those outreach offices. And so, and once you build a relationship with them, it's so critical, it's so vital. And as we know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. So call them. Let's make sure that your representatives or their staff know you. And you'll get to see the wonders of how that relationship matters. We know that things are based on relationships, and, you know, fight for what you believe in.
Yeah. So we're going to wrap up, although I would love to talk to you all day.
It's election season, Julie. I don't have all day. It's so busy, but it's so good. It's so great. This has been so good. I'm so grateful.
Thank you very much for joining. I always end my episodes with a self-care send-off, where my guest likes to challenge or encourage or gently remind folks to practice something of self-care. So what would you like to share with our audience?
This is definitely, and I'm talking to myself as well, for the overly ambitious, the overachievers, those who, you know, it's almost like you gotta do. Be kind to yourself, right? Be kind to yourself and be kind to your process. Now, what does that look like? I don't know what it looks like for you, but some of the things that I do and recommend is, one, make sure you have a village and people who are supporting you and pouring into you. Also, speak those positive words to yourself, like, I am great. I am amazing. I am the I am factor. That means you're putting things into the universe. And then also taking time to just woosah, right? Self-care Sundays for me are great. It's a must. Whatever that looks like for you, be kind to yourself and be kind to your process.
Wise words. So thank you again so much for joining us, Nike. We really appreciate your insight. You can look at the show notes for how you can connect with her further if you would like to, and her organization. And so thank you all so much for tuning in. We are wishing you good mental health.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.